Welcome to our April edition 2021 Tennis Evolution Plus VIP call. Springtime in the Rockies. It's warming up. People are getting outside much more, and we're on the courts. I'm probably going to be shooting some YouTube videos next week. A couple of announcements that I want to make. Number one, I had Slinger send me a ball machine. So you might be seeing some ball machine videos in the future. I think it's an incredible technology. I can't wait to try it out. It's behind me over here. I recommend a free plug for Slinger. I'll probably be doing a promotion for them in the next quarter, where, you know, I'll get a little kickback if people buy it. But I think if anyone like you are committed to improving your game, I would definitely look at investing in the Slinger, because you can go out on your own and groove your strokes and work on your game. So Mindy, it looks like you're trying it out next week. That's awesome. Fred, glad to be on the first coaching call from Baton Rouge. Fond memories of Baton Rouge. I've spent a little bit of time there. Had a student that played at LSU. That's awesome. So anywho, let's get started with the call. Don't know how good the slinger bag is on clay. So what I'm going to do right now is just had actually Sandy send in a video of her forehand, and she literally sent it in 2 minutes before the call. So I was downloading it. I have it pulled up. So we're going to attack the forehand right away. And again, please make sure you're muted. It really helps us on the other end try to do our thing. It just makes things work a lot more smoothly. So Sandy sent in her video. And so with that being said, we're going to start with the forehand tonight. My forehand is often inconsistent, especially returning second easy serves. Here's a video of my forehand. Hope you can help. All right, Sandy. Well, I think we can help. Now, the video you sent in is a different concept, and this is important. Can you show us the slinger? Yeah, I'll move around in a bit here to show you. So I'm sharing my screen now. And this is Sandy on a basketball court. Looks like she's hitting on a backboard. And so she says she's struggling with second serve return. So the first thing, Sandy, is if you can send in video of yourself playing someone. Mindy does a good job of this. She sends in videos of her playing a match so I can have more context around what's really going on. But just watching your stroke here, I think we might have talked about this before. Maybe it was just on the serve. But I can see that your grip, just from this view, your grip isn't, it's probably more towards an Eastern. I don't think it's continental. But the biggest thing I see, and I know it's because you're hitting on a ball machine, I mean, not a ball machine, you're hitting against a wall, it's very difficult to get the timing down. And so if you've watched me for any length of time, you know I'm a big fan of the follow through and the finish. And so if you're getting repetitions in where you're constantly swinging and you're stopping your racket right there, and you're stopping right there every time, then I think you could be doing more harm than good for your forehand. I would not recommend that people use a backboard or a wall if it's going to compromise technique. Now that was a better swing, but there's something I'm going to show you in a moment, two things actually with this swing. So first off, we would want to start with a different first move. So let me pull up the videos for this evening that I want to use to demonstrate. And we'll see. Yeah, this will be a good one to help. Okay. So Sandy, what you want to do is you want to break down your stroke and try to solve it in a systematic way. Improve one section at a time. So if you look at my forehand here, so if you look at my first move, and this isn't even a modern first move, I would have a different backswing now than I'm showing, but you can see how the racket tip is up and the arm is pulled across. So Sandy, when you go to hit your forehand, look at how your off arm goes straight out in front of you. And you can't see it from my view here, but your arm is very straight. Your dominant arm is very straight. So this setup is going to lend itself to more inconsistency. So what I want you to do is start to study the first move that I teach. Okay, start to study that. Let's see if I can find a side view or a better view here. This one, I'm getting this queued up for Craig. So Craig's gonna come next here. We'll see if this view will be a better view for the first move. Somebody could just mute their phone. Let's get here. See if this has it. It doesn't have the best angle. I have other good side views. So I don't think we're gonna see it from this angle. But the arm is more bent. And so this arm is straight and this arm is straight. And of course we want the arm pulled across, actually pulled across more like this, to be honest. So the setup can be improved, Sandy. And then when you swing, look at how you're jumping off the ground right here. So you only want to jump off the ground when the ball is at shoulder height. So if the ball is dropping on you, you do not want to be straightening your legs like this. So what I would do is I would study my footwork where you step in and you square up and you keep your knees bent. And that is in the membership site. And that is in the bonus section on forehand footwork. And then when you finish your swing, you can see how, and this is what I'm going to get into with Craig in a moment. I want you to notice what I do with my racket here. So this is called the hand turn right here. So what I want you to notice right here, and part of it's because of the grip is different, but look at how I swing. And actually Mindy does a great job of this on her forehand. Look at how the strings that made contact are facing towards the video screen, towards me. But when Sandy swings right there, the strings are facing the opposite direction. Now they don't have to turn over this much with her grip style, but they at least should be more on edge. So the strings are facing the opposite direction there. And then the follow through is still on the shorter end. I'd like to see that follow through go over the shoulder more. And there's a side view. So look at my first move. Look at how my arm is bent here. My elbow is bent. If you go back, Sandy, again, your arm is straight. So if you try to model the pros, this arm is in front, this arm is straight, this arm is across, this arm is bent. And then if you watch my follow through, look at my follow through, look at the difference in the follow through. So there's what we talked about after the swing where the strings are facing this direction instead of back the other direction. Sandy, your strings are facing the opposite direction right there. I hope that makes sense. And then there's your follow through. So let's take a look at my follow through. So look at my follow through. I'm exaggerating. What I want to see, Sandy, is the next time you send me a video, is I want to notice where my hand is. It's above my head. Okay, your hand is just above your shoulder. So I have a much fuller swing, and that's what I want you to work on. I want you to work on a fuller swing. So I just gave four tips on the forehand. The first move, post-contact, what you do with the hand post-contact, the follow-through, and then how she jumps with her legs. So that's a lot to focus on, right? What I would start to do is I would actually go in reverse. I would focus on making your follow through like this. And again, it's going to be hard to do against a wall. Follow through like this, that would be the first thing I would do. The second thing I would do is I would try to stay down more when the ball is in the strike zone instead of lifting. Then the third thing I would do, this is in order, so not on the same stroke. So once you get better at your follow through, then I would work on staying down more here, okay? Then once you get that fixed, I'd work on this hand turn. And the last thing that I would work on would be the first move. Now, if we were working together on a court in a lesson, I would attack the first move right away. But in terms of kind of training alone, I would work on getting the follow through down first. If you want to work on your first move first, that's fine. But what I don't want to see is a good first move and a poor finish or an inefficient finish. I'd rather have an inefficient first move and a great finish, just kind of the way I do it, kind of reverse engineer things. With that being said, Craig, we're gonna move over to you with your question about the forehand. So a couple things that I did, you sent this video in to me, said this video really helped, and I flipped it to right hand. So if anybody has questions, this was a video I released recently on YouTube, pertinent to footwork and movement, okay? And what I talk about in this video is, again, more of the footwork, kind of what to do on the footwork. So Craig, if you have any questions from this video, let me know. But we want to look at your son's video of his forehand. And based on what I just explained, so we talked about four things, right? So this is, see if you guys paid attention, guys and gals. Number one was the first move. Number two was lifting up it before contact, straightening the legs. Number three was the hand turn concept. And number four was the follow through. So when you watch Craig's son here, I want you all to type in the chat box one, two, three, or four, okay? One is the first move, two is lifting up too much, three is the hand turn, and four is the finish. I want you to type in the number of the thing that he could improve the most, okay? So we're gonna watch it in real time. We'll watch it in real time. And then we're going to slow it down. Okay. So let's watch a slow motion. You're going to type in one, two, three, or four, or you can say first move, legs lifting, hand turn, or finish. Okay. I'll give you that option. One, two, three, or four. Let's look at his first move. How do you think his first move is? Okay, let me know what you think of his first move. Now, when he hits this ball, what do you think he's doing with his legs? Do you think he's pulling off the ball with his legs on this shot? Do you think he has a good hand turn? This is the third thing that we talked about. And what do you think of his follow through? Okay, based on what I just said. All right, one, two, three, and four, would you work on the most? Now, there might be elements that he can improve in each area, but I want you to identify which area do you think he can improve the most? One, two, three, or four? All right, there's one. There's two with the legs. There's three with the hand turn. And then there's the finish. Now I'm going to go to the trusty chat box and see what everybody has said. Okay, Sandy says number three. So three is the hand turn, okay? Harrison says two, the legs. First move is good, that is correct. Number one needs the least amount of work. Number one needs the least amount of work. Lifting his legs, Mindy says. Wesley says two, lifting the legs. Harrison says four, finish. Sandy says three, question mark. Four for William, four for Fred, one for Craig. Interesting. That's the best part of his forehand, is number one. Coach, gonna give you a hard time with that one. Obviously, it's up to interpretation, right? So everybody's gonna have a different eye on what they think, but I'm just telling you where I would go with this. One gives it a three. Three, remember, is the hand turn. Mindy says have a higher finish potentially. Adam says four. Mindy says four. So I would say most of the answers are fours, and there's a balance between two and three. So here's where I go with this, and let me explain. First of all, I don't see anything with the legs, and I realize that he lifts. Okay, but that forehand right there, he's not straightening both legs completely and lifting. He's still kind of staying within the shot. It's a subtle thing to see, but he's not completely lifting like Sandy was, okay? Even when he finishes there, look at how that front knee is bent. And if we go back to his first move, I think he has an excellent first move. I'm sure we could tweak a couple little things there, but overall, I like what I see. I do think there could be maybe a little bit more wrist lag here, but that's not the thing that I would improve, that would work on. It's his hand turn. He's an advanced player. That hand should be turning more than it is at this stage of the swing. The follow-through could also be higher, but there are a lot of pros that finish where this player is finishing and it's around the shoulder and then it comes down afterwards. That's okay because he has tremendous extension right there. That's a lot more extension than we were seeing with Sandy. So you can get away with finishing a little lower as long as you extend. So if I'm on the court right now giving a lesson, I am working on number three like crazy with this player. I'm going all in on number three because one is pretty good, two is okay, is good, and four is within range. It's three that is not in range, okay? And I see this a lot, even with high-level players. I call it delaying the hand turn. It's a delayed hand turn. So let me show another example. Let me see if I can find, see if this is, yeah, this is it. Okay, so look at the difference here. So watch the racket. It looks really good right there. And then right there, it goes the opposite direction. The strings that hit the ball are facing towards the back fence. Check out my forehand right here. When to turn the hand. Look at the strings. See how my strings are facing towards the net and towards the net post. So look at that right there. See how the strings. And then this, it starts to turn a little bit right there. But it's facing the other direction right there. That's the issue to me. Let me see if anyone's made comments. Okay, no one's made comments yet. All right. So that's where I would go with this forehand. Now, here's an interesting thing. I just heard that ball. I think it hit the net. So this is where I go with it. If I hear a ball hit the net right there, okay, another thing to point out, and this is from the video, Craig, you referenced, if you're behind the baseline, I do believe you want to finish higher. You want to finish over the shoulder. You want to swing over the shoulder and finish higher when you're behind the baseline. When you're inside the baseline, you can finish more across. So any balls that are going in the net, the immediate fix, actually, look at that. He turns the hand on that one. Look at that. That's a hand turn right there. So Craig, this is the forehand every time. If any time we shoot a video and he's not doing that right there, we want to correct it. We never want the racket to go this way at any stage of the swing with his type of swing. That's an amazing swing right there. So this was at the 25-second mark. Let's look at the next one. There, he turned it there too. He turned it there. That's two in a row. Okay, look at this one. That one's a little delayed. Little delayed right there. He could turn it earlier. So Jeremy asks, what's the advantage of an earlier hand turn? So in my experience, it creates more feel, more control, more spin. So you're feeling it in your hand because if you go this direction too long, I actually feel some tension in the wrist when I do that. But if I just let the, when I let the hand release, you're going to get more spin, you're going to get more control, and you're going to get more natural acceleration. You're releasing the hand. And when people get tight, they don't release the hand. Now, I don't think he's tight here because he's just practicing. But if you can get this to happen, and it's going to look different for different players. Roger Federer, it's going to look more like this, like the strings are going to be a little bit more down. But for someone with a semi-Western, you're going to see the hand, the palm of the hand is going to face towards the net. And I always tell people if they have a delayed hand turn to think of turning the hand even before they make contact. It's a trick because, of course, it's not going to happen before contact. But to retrain it so that you don't go late, you need to think of doing it earlier. You have to exaggerate more. Now, this is an advanced technique, and that's why, Sandy, I said focus on your finish first. The hand turn doesn't have to be the number one focus for you right now. We need to get the follow through down. I'd like to see that first move improve, but just keep that in mind because it's not about just turning it over like this. You still have to throw the hand out like this. Yes, Sandy, you do have work to do, but where I would start is get that finish to improve. Look at my Topspin Forehand Secrets course and look at the relax the hand lesson and the high finish lessons. And that is your foundation to build on. Now, Craig, you did have questions about footwork. I think there's some things going on with the footwork. And we would need to probably go into greater detail. I'll see if I can. So like an example here on this one, I'll just point out a quick example on this. So he moves around this ball nicely. He shuffles. That's a nice shuffle. He shuffles. I like this, what I see. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. There's not a lot that I would do. The only thing I might think of here, Craig, is positioning. So he might want to move up to this ball and catch it maybe a little bit higher, actually, like right there. So now he's moving around and moving up, and he's catching it at the shoulder, and he can swing across and go inside out with that ball. Instead of there's a little bit of a tiny bit of a drop there. And I just think it's more positioning for him. These are the subtle things that we can help him with. It's pretty good though. I like. Like that one could have been an outside hop. So what I would do, Craig, is I would study again the forehand footwork patterns that I have in the forehand footwork bonus, because that one right there, he could use his legs better on that. Watch the outside hop, because what happens is you actually really lift this leg when the outside hop, and it's a better shot. You see how he's lifting, but both his legs are straight. So he's not really using his legs as well as he could. Harrison says, so the question is, if he has minutiae problems in 2, 3, and 4, which is easiest for the student to correct? It looked like he jumped on that wide ball when the ball is at waist level. Again, his hand turn is the number one thing to focus on. And then some of the other stuff is subtle. So that one right there, look, no hand turn right there. That's a problem. He should be like this. He should be this there, or buggy whipping it like this. The racket should not be going this way. That's the number one thing. It is levels above the other stuff. The other stuff is minutia. 3 is not a minutia for me, because I'm seeing more shots where he doesn't turn the hand. Right there, he doesn't. Actually, let me take that back. Right, he does turn the hand pretty well there. So I'll give him that one. It's about half of the balls, I think. Let's see. There, he doesn't do it there. So I want someone to be aware of what he does with his hand, okay? What do you do with your hand when you're playing the game? You like his open stance in the middle of the court. I like his open stance if he's moving around it to his left to hit an inside out or an inside in. I don't like it if it's just a lower ball and it's just right in the middle of the court. I'd like him to step in. All right, we're going to move on. I could go through that video all night. You know, but we've got other people obviously that need help tonight. And so that's what we're going to do. What I'm going to do real quick here is I'm just going to show the slinger. Let's see. So see if you can see the slinger bag here. No, that's not going to work. In a minute here, see if I can Jerry rigged the camera for you all. I don't know. There it is. There's the slinger bag right there. It's like a duffel bag. You put balls in it. It's got all the contraptions. It comes with a phone holder, so you can hold your phone. It's got a built-in charger. I mean, this thing is cool. And the recommendation, I haven't done this yet, but the recommendation is to get pressureless balls because they don't wear out as fast. So if you don't want the balls to wear out as fast, get the pressureless Wilson Trinity balls, but you can use any type of ball. But it would be a great, again, for someone like you, Sandy, you're showing me the board, the backboard hitting, use the ball machine so you can work on your follow through in your first move. Okay. A few more questions. William's been playing and teaching with it. It's awesome. Great. Fred's got the slinger in the back seat of my car, been using it for months, no problem on clay. If we are behind the baseline 2 to 3 feet and still ball is coming shoulder height fast, What swing path? Well, first of all, if the ball is coming shoulder height and you're 2 to 3 feet behind the baseline, you're not in the right position. So I always, when I see someone taking balls at the shoulder and they're 2 to 3 feet behind the baseline, they need to move back or they need to move up. I think that's like the no man's, no woman's danger zone. If you're standing right where this player's standing right here and the ball's even a little higher than that, I think this is a danger zone. I think he should be getting up to the ball. He should be making contact right here inside the baseline.
Hey,
right,
Jeff,
here.
You're not showing a video.
Oh, thank you. Try it again. Okay. So this player right here is a foot behind the baseline and he's taking it about at the shoulder. I'd like to see him inside the baseline, taking it sooner, or he needs to move back and let the ball settle and drop a la Nadal. So Craig, I think the biggest issue other than the hand turn is positioning up and back. I think that's the thing that we would want to look at, the nuance of moving up and back, which is what the Spanish and the Europeans do better than the Americans. They are trained from a very early age to do the up and back drills. You've probably seen a lot of the Europeans doing these drills, and now more Americans on the pro tour are. But we've been trained just to move side to side. It's actually, the game is more up and back than side to side. Moving up into the court, moving back in the court, learning to defend, even going back to the back curtain, being comfortable doing that. That's something that I was never taught at a young age. It was always stay right on the baseline, take the ball on the rise. We weren't taught how to absorb the ball, how to move up and back. If someone is strongly right eye dominant, would you have to be more semi-open so their right eye can be more? I would say yes, Harrison. Yep, your stance can be impacted by which eye is more dominant. Daniel, hi, Jeff. I have two questions unrelated to the current video. I apologize for interrupting, but the questions are this. Which stance generates more power on the forehand, open or square? Honestly, it's not, I don't necessarily think it's the stance. I think it's the type of ball. I think if the ball is up higher, I think if the ball is coming faster, I think if the ball is coming in your strike zone. So I don't think it's a stance that determines the power. So you want to use both stances, and it's always determined by the situation and the type of ball. How will you be able to increase power on a backhand? Is this through fitness or technique? Once again, sorry to interrupt. Definitely not interrupting. Keep asking the questions. Thanks, Daniel. So increasing power on the backhand is a combination of technique, relaxation, and of course, yeah, strength and your base. But I would say that it's a combination. I'd need to see your stroke to kind of comment on how to generate more power, how to get that. Obviously, if you're 12 years old compared to 18 years old, you're going to hit the ball generally harder at 18 than you would at 12, assuming you have similar technique. So there's a strength component as well. But a lot of people lose power on the backhand, including me, because we don't have the best technique. Thanks, Jeff. Great tips. That will really help Oliver's forehand. Mindy says, random question regarding a split step. Given the balls I get are coming 30 to 40 miles an hour, a split step at contact means I'm standing still for quite a while before the ball comes. Not sure what your thoughts are on that. Well, Mindy, if you are splitting at the right time, and we'll take a look at your video and see what we notice. If you're splitting at the right time, you actually would be moving right out of the split. I think one of the biggest challenges players have is that when they split, then they stop after the split. I call it a split and move. And we do have a lesson in membership. I believe it's in the footwork module, the success journey. See if I can go find it, but it's in baseline footwork secrets. So I would check out the split and move lesson, but that's why I call it split and move. It's not split. It's not split and watch, it's split and move. So if you're splitting at the right time, even if the ball is taking time to travel to you, you're still moving somewhere. You're moving in the direction of the ball. You're moving to where you need to be. You're taking adjustment steps. Would you recommend same positioning during returns, let it drop or take early? You would do both, Himanshu. You would focus on both. You want to be able to return from deeper in the court where the ball drops, and you want to return early in the court where you take it on the rise. When I try to hit a forehand with full lag, I hit long so often. Why? That's a good question. I'd have to see it, William, to know why it's going long to be able to comment. So unfortunately, without a video, it's very difficult for me to know. Yeah, you split. I'm guessing you do split and wait. We'll watch a video and see if we can pick something up for you. Fred, I'm going through your nutrition videos on the water intake. You recommend adding certain supplements to the water. Is this recommendation for every day or just days when I'm playing? Yes, I would put, well, right now I'm drinking a lot of lemon water. So I put a fresh lemon in my water every day for those minerals and cleanse the liver, good for the skin too. But there is a supplement that I'm very high on that you can put in water that essentially helps to make the water, I don't want to say it oxygenates the water more because I don't want to speak to something I'm not a complete expert at. But I did work with the world-renowned expert in water when I was finishing up my days on the tour. Actually, it was a few years after when I started coaching. And it's still the same supplement that's offered. I believe it's called H2. So we could follow up on that, but I would definitely use the H2. And I know that Jeremy asked about nutrition. So we're going to get to that question as well. So we'll circle back to that. I'm just trying to handle some of the questions that are popping in here while we're here. Harrison, you asked about the tennis racket. Yeah, I've seen it. I don't know much about it. What supplements for type 2 diabetics? Well, that's definitely out of my scope. I don't want to comment on that because it's just not my domain. But in general terms, speaking to someone who wants to improve their health, and again, can't speak directly to someone who's type 2 diabetic, so don't hold me to that. But, you know, a whole foods diet, I'm a big fan of. I'm not a big fan of processed. I'm not a big fan of fake. So, you know, people are going to disagree with me on this, but this strong move towards impossible meat, fake meat, soy, you know, tofu, that's not my thing. So I tried it for a stretch years ago, but in my personal research, I believe a whole foods diet, including red meat, again, people are going to disagree with me. So I'm not here to get into debate or argument. I'm just going to share my experiences with my studies, but there are a lot of fat soluble vitamins in red meat and the amino acids you get from red meat. That's very difficult to get from other foods. And for those of you who might be a vegetarian, obviously I respect, your beliefs and your opinions. You know, when I was on the tour, I tried the fruit diet. I tried the vegetarian diet. I did not do well on those nutrition plans. I do better on a plan that includes meat. And I always played my best when I had a big red steak the night before a match. So maybe it's superstition, but again, a lot of the people that I'm following now are more on the red meat carnivore approach rather than, the more plant-based approach. And there's schools of thought, there's pros and cons to both. You have to find what works for you. But, you know, I think the biggest culprit in today's day and age is sugar and processed foods and not meat. So if you have meat and vegetables and sweet potatoes and you, you know, eat a whole foods diet, then you're going to be able to stabilize your blood sugar levels, in a more balanced way. So that's my take on that. Is struggling moving up and back off the baseline a byproduct of a lot of indoor or hardcore tennis? Craig, I think it's more, yes, in that in clay, you have to move back more because the ball is coming deeper. But I really think it's just a function of training. I think it's a function of doing the right drills that set you up for success and also having the eye to understand when you move back and when you move up and how to use the appropriate footwork. So maybe that's a session we can do sometimes where where I watch a set and I can analyze whether the player should go up or back. the biggest, I'd say a bigger problem I see with advanced players. Yes, there are advanced players that play too deep in the court. Not even advanced players, even club players that are intermediates. The biggest issue I see is players just hugging the baseline and getting jammed. As soon as I move people back a couple of feet, that like it's almost like their world opens up. Oh, I have time now. Oh, I don't have to rush. Oh, my timing's better. I can let the ball drop a little bit. And of course, you can go the opposite way and move 10 feet behind the baseline and let everything come to you. That's not what we want either. But just moving back a little bit, letting the ball settle. Watch the pros. They stand well behind the baseline, but they also understand how to move up. In doubles, should you use the same semi-Western forehand grip as in singles or use a continental or Eastern to keep the ball lower? Yes, Michael, I saw your question come in. My answer to that is I think you should use the same grip in singles or doubles. So if you have a semi-Western grip, you should use that in doubles as well. Now you may go to the continental grip a little bit more. You may chip a little bit more in doubles because people are coming to the net, but you want to practice using your semi-Western and getting the ball to dip, more. With that being said, if you can chip the ball and get it low and it works, by all means do it. It's just, if you're asking me what the pros are doing, they're using their semi-Western forehand and they've learned to dip the ball at the opponent's feet. Wow, lots of questions still coming in. I've seen your return video where for second serve, kick serve, you advise to swing across. Where should I be positioned for that, on top of the baseline or inside? We'll see if we can pull up a video tonight on that. But you want to be inside the baseline. If you're taking a return at the shoulder and you want to swing across or down, you want to be inside the baseline. And the ball is going to be, you're going to let the ball climb to your shoulder or just above your shoulder, and you're going to go down on it. And you got to use the right footwork when you do that too. How do you deal with pressure and nerves during a tournament or match play? Do you have any tips or ideas for this? Well, Daniel, I know that you're working with someone who's one of the best in the business at that. Made a suggestion. I hope that's working out for you. Obviously, that's a very general question, right? So how do you deal with pressure and nerves? I think the first thing is just to accept that you're going to get nervous. It's going to happen. It's a normal thing. You care, you try, you're training, you want to win. It's important to you. So I think accepting that you're going to be nervous is important. Then the next thing is making sure you have your routines dialed in. Do you, in between points, do you take a deep breath? Do you slow down? Do you focus on loosening your hand in between? Do you shake out your racket in your hand? You want to start creating rituals and routines in between points, okay? Are you breathing out when you play? I was a breath holder. So when I got tight, I had a tendency to hold my breath. That did not serve me. So I think everyone should practice breathing out when they hit the darn tennis ball. It's a practice. You got to do that. And then also what can help, Daniel, is if you're very clear on your patterns of play and how you win points, you can go to those patterns when you're nervous. So if you know you serve out wide, I think Frank has probably talked to you about this. You serve out wide, you play to the open court, you know you've rehearsed that over and over again. That can ease your mind. But the first two things is accept you're going to be nervous. It's normal. You're not alone. And two, develop the routines that can allow you to keep your body as relaxed as possible, because you will be nervous. You will get tight. You will feel some anxiety along the way. But if you've practiced your routines, then you can handle the pressure better. How to return a weak pancake second serve at the 3-5 level? I deal with that frequently and poorly. Yeah, a lot of it has to do with footwork and technique. We have a lesson inside membership that covers that. You might want to check that out, and I'll see if I can pull that up as well. Fred says, I saw your recent emails on the Topspin Pro. While researching, I ran across a similar device with Billie Jean King's name on it. It's the iCoach. It's called the iCoach, and the iCoach is a great device as well. I own it too. It's back here. The iCoach is more for training your eye and keeping your head still. The Topspin Pro is more for your swing path, getting that topspin swing path. I would say I'm partial to the Topspin Pro, but that's not to say you can't get results with the iCoach, and it's helped a lot of players, you know, learn to keep their head at contact longer. You mentioned long exhales on the ground strokes. Would you shorten the exhale? Yes, I would shorten the exhale on the volleys because it's more of a, you know, a punch or a shorter swing. All right, that's a lot of questions we just pounded through there. Let's jump back to some videos. And we handled Craig. Michael's question we handled about the grip. Okay, let's see. I have a question from Gary. On most ground strokes, you look like you have a semi-Western. I just watched your video on the forehand slice and it looks like you've moved to either wet Eastern or weak continental volley grip, but I can't tell. What do you recommend? Yeah, I use a soft or a weak continental when I go to the forehand slice. So that's what I do there. All right, let's move on to, let's move to the backhand. So Mike So sent in an email that said, for this month's call, I may not have a video for analysis. The question I have is how to handle the high ball backhand side, two-handed backhand. My daughter seems she can't find the correct contact point and looks to me she is often late to hit the high backhand. So the ball lacks pace. What is the ideal contact point to high backhand balls and how to find the correct contact point? So obviously, Mike, and Mike knows this, I sent him an email back. It would be very helpful if I had a video, if I could see it. But with that being said, I did pull up some videos. And there's a couple things to address here on the high backhand. The toughest, probably one of the toughest shots in tennis. And before I get to that, Danny says, Jeff, I just watched the Monte Carlo Open where a player served inside the court. What does that mean, served inside the court? I'm not quite sure what you mean by that. All right. So on the high backhand, the first thing to analyze is your movement. So if you were to put video on your backhand, what you want to see is how do you get back? And most people, when they go back, what I want you to notice here with this video is first off, I'm a few feet behind the baseline. Now, I don't really show the split here. You should split there. But notice my drop step. And then a crossover. Most people don't do this. Most people just like go backwards or they turn and shuffle. So you're losing a lot of ground by not getting back. Okay. So that's one thing I would work on. Now, that ball is way too high still. So that demonstration, I did a good job of crossing over, but I still didn't get back far enough. So what you want to do is you want to really hustle to get back. If that ball is coming high, you need to be efficient with your first move. Okay, so you're going to come out of the split. You're going to drop step right away. A lot of people do a little bit of that. We're not going sideways like that. We're going to drop step and crossover like a quarterback. So we're not going to do that either. We're not going to shuffle. I just said it. Pretend you're a quarterback. So drop step right there. Drop step. And then you set the racket. So you get the racket in this position right here. You don't take it all the way back. You keep it right here. Just on a, like a forehand, you go here with a backhand, you start to get your racket set without taking it back. Drop step right here. There's the crossover. That's what most people are not doing. And then once you finish that move, then you really have to shuffle quickly. And the goal would be to let the ball drop. Like, this is the thing. A lot of players are not comfortable going back to the back fence. And if you're back at the back fence and you're doing this, that means you probably could have taken the ball out of the air and hit a swinging volley. You should be able to get back to the back fence and let this ball drop a little bit. Also, there is a footwork pattern. I think I have it downloaded here. It's called the outside hop. And let's see. I don't think it's this video. Let's see if I can. You want to learn to go off of your outside leg. So I think I show it in this video. And this is very advanced, but for Mike's daughter, she's going to want to learn this. When the ball comes wide, see if I have it here. Here we go. I don't know if I have it. I don't think I showed it there. So basically, you would want to get back and let it drop, or you go off your outside leg. And unfortunately, I don't think I have this in this video. Let me see if I can find it. I'm surprised I don't have it. No, this is stepping in. Yeah, so bums me out because I thought I had the outside hop to show. What I'll do is I'll show it on the forehand side, and all you have to do is flip it on the backhand side. That's what I'll do. I'll go ahead and log in a little bit later and show it. But the other thing is the swing path has to be much more low to high. So you have to really go up as high as possible, assuming that the ball is down here. If the ball gets up here, you're in trouble. I think the moral of the story here on the high backhand is most players are not moving correctly to the ball. If it's a high ball, you should have time to get deeper, close to the fence, let the ball drop. I see a lot of players still taking high balls around the shoulder. That's the big takeaway that I want you to have. Can you move your feet efficiently in a way where the ball can actually drop and you can let it settle in your strike zone? That's the big takeaway that I want you to have on that. Wouldn't you want to take the ball on the rise? Yes, if you can take the ball on the rise with a high off of a high backhand, great, but it's very difficult to do that. It's difficult to time. And essentially, that's what the opponent wants you to do. They want you to try to take it early and short hop it and mistime it. So that's the whole thing again, is it all depends on your movement too. If you don't have great movement going back, then you're going to have to take the ball on the rise. Remember, tennis is a situational game. So you want to be able to take the ball on the rise, but you also want to be able to back up and hit a high ball back to your opponent. One final question. If being 2 to 3 feet behind the baseline and ball shoulder height is the wrong position, then how switch pattern moving back when you actually jump, get off the ground or outside hop? I thought it's when you are behind the baseline. So Himanshu, can you restate the question? I don't understand what you're asking. Something about the switch pattern. You can be 2-3 feet behind the baseline and use a switch pattern, but when you use a switch pattern, you'll be jumping back. You won't be staying in place when it's like that. A lot of 3.0 players hit such high lobs, the ball bounces very high on the backhand. If they're getting burned by the lob, should they step in and volley? Yeah, they should learn how to hit a swinging volley. And that's the thing. I don't understand why we're not training players, even at a 3-0 or 3-5 level. Why don't we teach them how to hit ground strokes out of the air and get comfortable? Because you're going to have to deal with that high ball. Okay, let's move on. Let me pull up. It's right here. I'm going to try to find the outside hop for you all because I felt bad that I didn't show this dynamic, just so that, again, most of you are not going to be doing the outside hop tomorrow. It's very advanced. But in the spirit of showing you and educating you what's happening with movement, I want to show that. So let me see if I can get logged in real quick here. Yeah, got it. Okay, great. Here we go. So when I show you this video, I just want you to picture the same thing would happen on the backhand side. And again, very advanced concept, but notice what I do on this forehand here. So look at where I am in the court, and I know we're right there. Look at how I'm on the outside leg. And see how I jump off of the outside leg and land on the outside leg and really kick my leg. So Craig, when we were talking about the forehand earlier, we want to see your son do this more when the ball is high and deep in the corner and he has time to get over there. So you could do the same thing on the backhand side where you go off your outside leg. So Mike, so when you watch this recording, if you're not, or I think you might be on right now, you could train her to go off of her outside leg and hop and land on this. So if you can't find the lesson, I would just look at the forehand and just mimic it. But again, most of you are going to have a really hard time doing this on the backhand side because we've trained ourselves to only step in. And that's one reason why we have such a hard time with the backhand. So it looks like this when you're jumping and this leg is kicking out. Okay. So let me just open up chat again. Yeah, swing volley. I'd have her hit swinging volleys from 3 feet inside the baseline, not from the service line. So give her a high ball that's going to land, that's, and that she has to basically hit it 3 to 6 feet inside. She has to move up and just hit a backhand ground stroke out of the air. Do that 15, 20 minutes a day. She'll be the best person in the country at that. And then learn, teach her how to move back. But of course, send me a video and I'll help. Himanshu says, you don't jump back on the switch pattern, especially the high ball. That's true. And when it's low, you just step back and don't get off the ground. I still don't know what you're asking, Himanshu. I'm sorry. It's not clear. And I know you haven't sent me any videos before, but I can really break it down for people. If I see a video, I can say, this is what you need to do. But without it, I'm guessing. Can you do it with a one-handed backhand? Absolutely. And you can also use a what's called the back to front footwork pattern. And that's more, that's also a tough one to get. So just keep in mind what I'm showing you here is super advanced. Okay. And you know, I have to work with pros on this stuff. It's not easy. Let me see if I have it. No, Himanshu, let's keep the mute on. The best thing to do again is to, if you can send me a video. Here is what's interesting is here is, oh, I think we might have, it's interesting. I don't know if I have outside hop for backhand, but here's outside hop on the one-handed backhand. So this is what we're talking about here on the backhand side. So there it is. Okay. So it's going to look crazy here. Okay, so there it is. See how I'm on my outside leg and I jump on my outside leg and I land on my outside leg. So this is, again, it requires tremendous coordination, balance, dexterity, practice, but this gives you more flexibility to hit the ball off of different feet. You can also do what's called the back to front. So this one right here, this is where you load the outside leg. So this is what you could do on the backhand side as well, Mike. Okay, so look how I'm on my back foot. And when I jump in the air, I land on my front foot. And so you could practice that as well. The key would be to train to play off of all the different feet, front foot, back foot, back foot to front foot to back foot. So think of like if you were a gymnast or if you're a wrestler, you're learning different moves. And this is at the higher echelons of the game. So I'm not expecting those of you to do this stuff. This is much more advanced and there's other ways we can get results besides fixating on this. And the biggest way is that when I showed at the beginning, the movement back, the drop step crossover. I would guess if you lined up 25 people on this call and you all sent me videos of your high backhand, I would bet that maybe one or two does the crossover move. So I would just get the drop step crossover down. And I would also try to hurry and get deeper in the court so the ball can drop. You're not moving fast enough or quick enough or getting back far enough. Okay, let's regroup now. And I want to shift gears here. So we've handled the forehand, we've handled the backhand. What I'm gonna do tonight is I'm actually going to hit Michael's slice backhand because it's in the backhand family. And then I'm going to shift to more, a little bit more mindset stuff. So what I think I'm going to do is handle the serve videos for next week because there's some important things that I want to share around the mindset. And so I'm going to pull up Michael's video on the slice. He says that his slice backhand is floating. And I want to show him and everyone else kind of what I think is going on. Sharing screen now. Helps me to say that as I'm doing it so I don't get carried away. All right. So this is Michael. Here's his slice backhand right here. All right. So we're looking at the slice backhand. So the first thing that I see, Michael, here's another one. Okay, so I'm going to comment on each one that I see. The very first one, there's not enough backswing. So you're really, it's almost like a volley. You're just punching it like a volley. So I would want to see you really take the racket back much further and see where you're taking the racket back. It's down by your waist. Now I want you to look at how I take my racket back right here. So my racket is above the shoulder. So if you want to learn how to hit the slice, you're going to focus on taking the racket back much further than you are. And then instead of kind of punching at it, it's going to be more of a swing. Okay. So that's the first thing. And then the follow through is pretty short as well. And I want you to notice the difference. Watch my follow. Look how far my racket goes back. And then look at my follow through. Right there, much longer swing than what I'm seeing from you. So that would require you to take it back further and to follow through further. I'd get on a ball machine and work on that. Now, the next one, I want you to notice something. So you go high to him, and then this ball right here, see how you're taking it above the shoulder? This is an example of you either need to move up and hit it at waist height, or you need to move back and let it drop. You're in what I call no man's land behind the baseline. This is a danger zone right in here. To catch a ball above the shoulder behind the baseline is trouble. Now that was a longer follow through, so that was better. So looking at this right here again, that's better. That's better, but, and you did take it back. So you took it back further that time. But what I want you to see is when you go to swing, right there, the racket face is kind of dropping, it's open. And then look at how you kind of close the face here. So what I want you to see that I do here, and I have a tip for you, Michael, that you can try. You said it's floating. And this is going to require you to kind of scramble the brain a little bit. But watch, look how my racket face is open here. But when I go to the ball, look at how it's almost square to the ball. It squares up right there. And I feel like when you swing, right, you do square, you are square a little bit. I'll give you that. I'll give you that you're more square than I thought you would be. But it's almost like, how can I explain it? It's almost like you're going down. It would actually be better if you notice how when I swing right here. Watch this. Look at how my racket face is even open right there and how yours is kind of closed. We've got to figure out an orientation for you where you actually, this is pretty good, but you almost have to come inside the ball, okay? So what's happening is you're like straight behind the ball and then you're kind of chopping down like straight behind, whereas my racket, my racket goes down, but it doesn't go down as extreme as yours. It goes more across. So you go across, but the racket face is kind of, it's kind of closed. So right here, see, even right there, see, I'm starting to open the racket face after, and you're starting to close it. So it's counterintuitive because you think, well, Jeff, it's floating, so I need to kind of close it right here. But there's something off with how you're hitting the ball right there, like behind the ball, Whereas I'm cutting across the ball a little more. So it's like you want to get like the inside of the ball and try to create a little more side spin when you slice. And it's harder to do that when the ball is higher, like you're taking it a little bit higher than I am. So I think the biggest thing that would help you is actually getting the ball at the waist height instead of at shoulder height. That's what I would focus on. Do not slice when the ball gets shoulder height. Slice it when it's at waist height. And then this could work for you. But here's the one tip I want to give you. You said the ball floats. This is going to be the trick. You've got to try to tell yourself, I'm going to slice this ball into the net. And you have to be willing to lose the point slicing in the net. Because if you keep floating the slice 100 more times, guess what you're getting good at? Floating the slice. So, you know, without changing a lot of technique, you've got to practice hitting the ball down into the net with slice. And I bet it won't happen. I bet the ball will still float for you because you're used to just floating it over the net. So I always tell my players that float the slice to hit down into the net. If you have to bounce this ball before the net to break this habit, that's how I would do it. And the second thing I would work on is letting the ball drop, getting the ball in your strike zone instead of around the shoulder. Okay. Let's shift gears to, I want to talk a little bit about, I want to shift to some mindset stuff. So I'm currently working with a pro player that's trying to make breakthroughs. And I might've mentioned it on the last call, but what I want to impress upon all of you is when you're all doing this, cause you're getting this fix every month by getting on these calls. But the player I'm working with right now is like a different person than the one that started working with me 2 months ago. And we had a previous relationship, but now it's more formal. Where I want to go with you on this, and Michael, you made a point of talking about how you've been doing heart math. He's doing heart math every day. He's sending me his results of how he's doing heart math. If you're not aware of heart math, you can just Google it. I'm not going to type it in the chat box right now, just because I'm on stream of consciousness right here. But basically, it's a way to focus on your breathing and to slow down your breathing. And this player is doing heart math. He's also changed how he's structuring his practices and what he's focusing on. And so obviously he's messaging me every day. I'm giving him feedback, but a lot of his growth is coming from his own self-discovery. So he's taking the time to do heart math. He's breathing. He's slowing down his breathing every day. He's hitting his serves. He's studying his technique. He's very engaged in the learning process. And that's the big takeaway that I want you to have, is that you can start to organize and understand your game better by taking notes and journaling after you play, by slowing down your breathing every day, by managing your thoughts, your positive thoughts versus your negative thoughts, how you speak to yourself. If you're hypercritical of yourself on and off the court, that's going to slow your progress. The final thing I want to say about this player is that what we're working a lot on is this idea of going in neutral. So we've talked about being in neutral. Imagine your car, it's either in drive or reverse. Drive would be positive, you're going forward. Reverse would be you're going backwards, you're negative. Neutral is just idle neutral. The more you can stay in neutral when you play tennis, or even in life for that matter, the better you can manage and make decisions. Because if you're making decisions based on frustration or emotion, you might struggle. So practicing, even if, let's say you're in a negative state of mind on the court, don't try to get positive, just move into neutral. And the guy that's talked a lot about this, who plays in the NFL, is Russell Wilson. He talks about finding neutral. So even if he's thrown 3 interceptions, he gets to practice moving into neutral and focusing on the next play and the next pass. And for you, it's the next point, the next game, being in neutral when you make those decisions. So the theme is, how can you train yourself to be in neutral? And that's through your breath, it's observing your thoughts, and it's looking at things through a more observant lens, to look at things as being interesting and be curious rather than judgmental. The second thing that I want to talk about is I actually had a phone call today with another pro tennis player who, ironically enough, I have followed this gentleman who is not American. He happens to be European, and he's been top 100 in the world. And he reached out to me through Instagram. And then he reached out to me through WhatsApp. And we just had an initial talk today because he wanted to share some things with me. And he is struggling with, you could call it the yips. And he's having some issues with his serve and his forehand. And the reason I'm sharing this with you is that here is a player that got to 68 in the world, tons of talent. He's beating amazing players, and he even is getting the yips. So if you're a club player, if you're an intermediate player and you're like, oh my gosh, these pros, they have it made. This guy's a mess right now mentally. He's like, he's ready to like pull his hair out because he can't figure out why he's literally got the yips on his serve and his forehand. It's a very intriguing case. It's an intriguing case study, but I want to share that with you, knowing that these pros are not, they're more like you than you realize. They may have better techniques. They may have better athleticism. They may be better tennis players, but they're struggling with the same mental mind gnats, the gnats that are buzzing around in their head. There's a lot of mental health challenges on the pro tour. I was talking to another former player who's retired, who does a lot of meditation work. And he says a lot of the pro tennis players are unhappy. They're not happy people. And so I just want to impress upon all of you that even if you're an incredible tennis player, it doesn't mean you have the mind dialed in. And so it's very important as a tennis player to be training your mind. It's the most important resource you have to enable you to make better decisions, whether it's around your technique or your footwork or your strategy, but train your mind. Very, very important. And it's something that's come up with two high-level athletes that you would think, looking on the outside, they've got it made. But both of them have been struggling with different things, and we're going to work on helping them get the clarity and get on the right track with some things. And so with that being said, I want to pull up some more comments. I want to kind of stay on this kick around the mindset. Can't believe how time flies. It's already 7:18 here in Denver. First email I want to share from Gunner. And Gunner and his mom and his dad. So Gunner lives in Pennsylvania. They've been working through my content. And I made a suggestion that they go see a coach that's based in Ohio, close to where they live. And he played on the pro tour. He's a high performance coach. And he actually, when he was on the tour, I don't know if Carol Lee, I don't know if Michael mentioned this, but he flew to Denver to work with me. And we went to the local park over here several years ago. And they said, we met with Michael this past Saturday. It went really well. He worked with Gunner and definitely enjoyed the lesson. Michael found that Gunner's static shots are very good, but add in some movement and they break down. So Gunner's got some homework to do. And so I share this because I'm actually teaching my girlfriend how to play tennis. And we've had a couple of lessons so far. And her forehand technique is looking really good. But as soon as I make her move, it starts to break down. So make sure that you are working on your technique and your follow throughs, Sandy, wink, wink, when you're competing. So everybody should be working on their finishes and their first moves to the best of their ability when they're reading and reacting. Now, I know there's a lot going on and there's a lot to do, but it's harder to keep the technique when the ball is moving around. And it's really important that even when the ball is moving around and you're reacting, that you still try to focus on the fundamentals, even if you're missing shots. Now, if you're competing with someone, it's tough to do. But if you can get someone to feed you balls, or you can play baseline games where you're just working on your follow-throughs and your first moves, that will help you kind of keep that technique when you're good at it in a static position, but you might struggle when the ball is moving everywhere. So I'm glad that the lesson worked out. I want to get progress. They sent in a picture as well, which is really cool. And Michael's a great guy. So this is from Jerome. So Jerome has been one of my longtime students. I think Jerome is on the call tonight. And I just want to share, you know, he just said, I want to take a few moments here to give you the proper accolades for all of your devotion to the game of tennis. You, in my opinion, are the very best instructor I've ever encountered for many reasons that I have often pondered. The most obvious one for me is that you always make reference to drills and procedures that are most pertinent to your video instruction. If students follow your suggestions, they will begin to be able to self-teach themselves, which is what we talked about earlier. The whole goal here for me to you, distance learning, is for you to be able to self-diagnose and self-teach yourself following the principles that I'm laying out. And if you do that and you're clear on what to focus on, I really truly believe each and every one of you can improve. Skipping any of your thoughts will only slow the tennis progress, as I can personally attest to that after being your understudy for over 5 years. So the point of that is we have a process here. Study the videos, record yourself, study the techniques, focus on your first moves, focus on your follow-throughs, focus on the strategies, and systematically you can improve. Okay, next one. This is from Juan. So Juan had a nice thing to say as well. Hi, Jeff. Hope you're doing great. Update about my tennis. This weekend, I was playing a local tournament. Yesterday, I played in my first match. It felt amazing. All the points were free points due to my topspin serve. A few moments ago, I finished my second match where the result was 1-8. My serve was too inconsistent. My focus could be better. I know what I have to do in this type of situation. Slow down. Don't rush. Aim through the window. But I didn't apply it. The mental game is really important. I started playing tennis a year and a half ago, and at the beginning, I underestimated the power of the mind. Now it is the biggest challenge. Jeff, I really appreciate your work. This process has accelerated thanks to everything you have taught me. This is part of the game I keep going. So Juan, thank you so much. You know, obviously I set the table earlier with talking about those pro athletes, and they're both having mental challenges. And guess what? You're not alone. These are the best athletes in the world, and they have the same things going on than you do. And what this is all about is mastering your mind, mastering, changing your life, changing your tennis through mastering your mind. You have to watch your thoughts. You have to watch your emotions. You have to stay in neutral. And as you alluded to, Juan, how about that for self-coaching? You know now to slow down, to not rush, and aim through the window. 3 months ago, Juan, if you would have sent this same message to me, you would have said, Jeff, I don't know what's wrong. I don't know why mentally I keep choking and I'm not playing well. I remember an email you sent that was very more on the negative side and confused. And I believe I said to change how you look at this, change how you approach this, and this email to me epitomizes it. You recognize that you lost because your serve was inconsistent and your focus could have been it better. So next time you're going to slow down your breathing. You're going to take your time and you're going to aim through the window. Aiming through the window is one of the best tips that you can focus on if you want to play great tennis. And Michael, with your slice backhand, your window, we want it to be lower. We want that window down even in the net. Try to miss your aim for a window that goes through the net so the ball won't float anymore. Okay. Keep working on the mind, Juan. I love that report. Thank you so much. You sent another one as an addendum. I realize that I'm used to underestimating my opponent. That happened today. So obviously you never want to underestimate your opponent. You want to play the ball and you want to be the best version of yourself, whether you're playing someone better than you or worse than you. You focus, you bring your game. And again, if you do heart math and you focus on your meditations on a consistent basis, that should start to translate on the court. Let me go take a look at some of the comments that are coming in. Himanshu says, yes, Jeff, here you are behind the baseline. An outside hop you are doing and the ball is shoulder high. Is it wrong position? It's only the wrong position if I don't get the result I want. So if I'm jumping in the air and using a outside hop and I catch it at shoulder height and I'm ripping it, it doesn't matter. But if I'm taking it at shoulder height behind the baseline and I'm not getting enough on the ball and I'm not using the correct footwork, the ball's not going to go where you want it to go. So the reason I can take it at shoulder height behind the baseline is because the outside hop is being used. Most people don't use the outside hop. Okay. Harrison says, look at Rose wall, like brushing the back of the ball. That was on the slice backhand, go through the ball. That's right. Shoulder turn. I have a student who lost his confidence halfway through our season. What can I do for him? Well, what you have to dial in, Harrison, is you have to start looking at his self-talk. How is he talking to himself, he or she? How is he reacting to mistakes? How is he going through his routines? Those would be the big things I would focus on. Himanshu says, being neutral is highest state of spiritual mind where a person doesn't get overexcited when momentum is on his side, nor gets too low when it's not. Best we can focus on the process. Exactly right. Sandy's on it with her follow-throughs and her finishes. Harrison just had ankle surgery today, so I can't send any videos yet. That's cool. Let's get you feeling better, Harrison. Yeah. Which one is it? Quicksilver H2, William says, or Ultra H2? I'd have to look. I think it's Ultra H2, William. Send me an email after this call and I'll confirm. Ultra H2 supplement, it's a little tablet you drop in the water. It dissolves, gets a higher energy water for you. Okay, let's go over to Wes. And what we're going to do is we're going to save serve and strategy for next week. And let's look at Wes. So Wes has been one of our super students, so passionate. I want to show a couple videos of Wes tonight. I want to read you a couple of emails. One is, just wanted to send you my progress so far. I was hitting really well this week, still plenty of years, but I'm only focusing on the good ones because we all make mistakes. That's the mindset of a winner right there. Still plenty of errors, but I'm only focusing on the good ones because we all make mistakes. One of my favorite lines to my players is, it's okay to make mistakes. We're so fixated on being perfect and never making an error. I tell my students, please make mistakes because every time you make a mistake gives you an opportunity to learn and make an adjustment. Wes says, talk about a spiritual warrior, Himanshu. Wes says, I'm on the path, still a long way to go, but I feel I've reached the next evolution in my progress. Here's another one from about 10 days ago. Hey, Coach Jeff, I won my singles match 9-0 against a higher ranked opponent tonight. I played down the middle a lot and I ran the 2-1 pattern until my opponent threw his racket in frustration. Now let's read that again. Let's let that sink in. He played down the middle a lot and he ran the 2-1 pattern. So this is a student, Wes, who was studying my strategy courses and he used the down the middle pattern and the 2-1. The 2-1 means two cross court and then one down the line. He used two patterns, played down the middle and the 2-1 and got his opponent to throw his racket in frustration. Very simple. Imagine if you just play your whole match where you just hit the ball straight down the middle of the court until the other guy misses and you just do that. Try it sometime. See if you can just frustrate your opponent by just always playing down the middle. Don't have to do it all the time, but maybe you do it 70% of the time or 50% of the time. You'll be surprised at how much success you'll have just by being boring with your strategy. On the mental side, I stayed stone-faced the entire match. Even when I hit really great volleys off of my serve and volley plays, I went right back to the baseline for the next point. I was still nervous. Remember, Daniel, you asked about nerves? Even when I was up 5-0, but I let self two have some fun and got self one out of the equation. So there are two selves, right? You have self one that's judging and you have self two that is on autopilot, just having fun. And so he was able to recognize that and stay neutral. My serve is taking off too. I will send an updated video soon. I think I fixed my elbow position, but I'm still struggling with my hips and tuck the tail. I still serve very well in my match. So again, True student, studying the material, staying in the process. Amazing stuff. Really, truly amazing. This one's from February, but I will not read that one. Maybe another time. I'm going to read the one that just came in. Let's see if I can find it. Yeah, here it is. Hey, coach, advice for overcoming a loss due to cheating. Unfortunately, lost my last USTA doubles match to a few blatantly bad calls from my opponents. Trying to not take the loss personally, but I feel frustrated having great shots stolen from me. The best I can think of to overcome being confronted with cheating is that good shots hit now can be hit again, whether they are called in or out. So Wes, that's a tough one. You know, we play this game because we want to play with fairness and integrity, and we expect our opponents to have character. And it sounds like this player didn't have that. And, you know, if you can't call a lines judge and they keep cheating you, that's pretty tough. My suggestion, and I think you have a great attitude, obviously, you know, you can hit that shot again, but, you know, doesn't help you if it's a game point and it's five all in the third. That could be the thing that determines winning or losing. What I would probably do is look at it like, okay, I have to just get that much better than this guy so that next time it's not going to matter even if he cheats me a few times. So that'd be one way to look at it. The second thing I would do is I'd probably ask the USTA, what can I do if I feel I'm being blatantly cheated? How can I handle that? The third concept is, and I'm thinking about when I was a kid or even when I was in the pros and, you know, had to call my own lines, there were times that I would definitely talk to my opponents and kind of get in their face a little bit, not in a way of like fighting them, but I'd make a comment like, you know, why do you have to do this? Or what's the point? Like, we're out here competing. What's your deal? So I'd probably in the heat of battle, probably say something to my opponent, like, what's your deal? You know, like, and I would make him know, I'd make them know that you can't bully me. You can't cheat me. Like, I'm on to you. Like, I know what's up, or something to the point of, hey, if you need to cheat to win, go for it. I'm out here having a good time doing my best. So I'm not saying that's going to solve it. I don't even know if it's going to help, but I think it's important to let your opponent know you're not going to back down. And again, I think you probably have to probably complain to the USTA, you know, or find out what recourse there is to help you deal with cheaters, because it's not a world that I live in. You know, if someone was cheating me on a tennis court, I don't know what I would do now, because it's like, what can you do? It's just like, all right, well, that takes the fun out of it. So I think what I'm going to do now is I'm going to wrap up tonight. We were able to handle most of everything except for the serve and strategy. So we're going to save that for next week. We're going to tackle serve. We're going to tackle strategy next week. A couple of just reminders and review from the call tonight. Himanshu says, just get angry and confront them, but from outside only. Fake anger, intentional anger, and a page from spiritual book. They won't cheat again. Wes says, I'm fired up for sure. I will adapt and overcome. Harrison Tilden, never change your winning style of play. Always change your losing style of play. That was a match. Absolutely no judgment. Just deep breathing every point. Awesome stuff. So let me just summarize tonight. So we started with the forehand tonight. All right. We started with this idea. We want to improve our first move. We want to improve our follow through. We probably want to avoid the backboard unless you have time to finish your swing. And most people don't. The ball comes back too fast. So you're better off focusing on shadow swings, sending shadow swings in, or using a slinger than using a wall. Advanced players, you want to work on that hand turn. Okay. I want to work on that hand turn. Advanced players, even intermediate players, you want to work on up and back, getting the ball in the right strike zone. Do not take the ball at the shoulder 3 feet behind the baseline. Get deeper in the court, 6 feet back, 8 feet back. Let the ball drop. on the backhands, the high backhands, work on your drop step crossover, work on getting deeper in the court, letting the ball drop. Make sure your swing path is low to high. Exaggerate that low to high swing path. Slice backhand, take a bigger backswing, get a more shoulder turn. Make sure you have a nice complete finish, but more importantly, try to hit down into the net to avoid the ball floating. On the mental side, get into neutral as much as you can and work on your breathing. Consider doing heart math where you manage your emotions and you manage your breath and stay equal as long as you can. Okay, we're here at Tennis Evolution to help you grow, to help you develop, to help you coach yourself to become a better player and a better person. It's about self-diagnosis, self-coaching, leaning on me for support when you need it, getting on these calls and asking questions. I know Mindy had a great question about her development. I want to tackle that next week. I want to tackle the serves that we're going to look at next week. There is some improvement that all of you can make. I know that. That's why you're here. But it's all about step-by-step improvement. And I think one of the biggest challenges that we all have is doing too much and focusing on too many things. So what I want you to do is I want you to pick one thing that you're going to focus on. Like Sandy, for example, for the next month, just work on your follow-through. Get that down. Then we'll move on to something else. On your mental game. At the end of the day, write down all of your negative statements that you can throw in the trash. And let's pick one statement that you say the most, like, I always miss that backhand. And change that statement to, okay, I'm going to clear the net on my backhands. I'm going to hit the ball higher over the net. I'm going to get under the ball. Maybe with Michael's slice, I'm going to work on slicing into the net. But you take one concept and you fixate on it and you improve that one thing. Instead of trying to improve 10 things, and instead of working on one thing for 2 days and then changing 2 days later, pick the one thing and get good at it. And then come back to me next month, show me the one thing is better, and then we'll work on the next thing. It's going to take time. It's a process. Stay diligent with you. You guys are awesome. Amazing. Craig, thanks for being on the call. And just take a lot of the stuff that I'm sharing because I'm not pulling this stuff out of my butt. You know, I've been studying this game a long time. And one of the reasons I can give you all quicker answers to solutions is because I struggled so much as a player trying to get answers. I didn't get answers from coaches. I had good coaches. I also had coaches that slowed me down. And my goal is to accelerate your progress and to just cut through the crap and give you the shortcuts. And if something doesn't work, we'll address it the next month. All right, you guys are awesome. The recording will be up early next week. I have my team edit it. We'll do a call next week as well. We've got plenty of serve and strategy videos to cover, and I'm looking forward to it. I had a blast doing this call tonight. Usually we do serves. Tonight we did ground strokes, and we did more of the mental side of things. You're not alone. We're all in this community together, and we've got some exciting announcements coming up on the next couple months. We're going to have a forum. For those of you who are on Facebook, we're going to have a forum where you can submit videos. We've got a lot of other things coming up, and I'm excited to do that. Thanks, everybody, for your time tonight. I'm going to go eat some dinner and catch up with my girlfriend. Have a great one. Good night.